Blog Talk Radio.
All right, thanks for listening to The Unknown Show. I'm Bud Smith. Starting on the show, we're going to talk to Michael Seidlinger. We're going to talk to Gabriel Ricard, and we're also going to talk to Cameron Pierce. That's going to be a good show. Alright, enough of that. Alright, thanks for tuning in. So, first on the show, we're going to talk to Michael Seidlinger. He's a novelist. He's got a few great books out. Most notably, My Pet's a Real Killer, and the recently released Laughter of Strangers. And it looks like he's got another one forthcoming from Lazy Fascist. We'll talk about that. Michael's also the publisher and editor of Civil Coping Mechanisms. So I'm just going to pull him on the show, and we'll just get into this. Hey, how's it going, man? You there?
Yeah, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yeah, can you hear me? What's up?
Yeah. Good, how are you, man?
Good. Where are you calling from?
Fairfax, Virginia, which is basically D.C. It's the metropolitan area, about, like, 15 minutes away or so from actual downtown D.C.
Yeah, I just when I think of D.C., I think of you know, sitting in traffic.
Yep.
What's the trick down there? How do you fucking stay sane? Or is there
well, I don't think I'm sane. So I think the answer to that is what?
Yeah. What was the question again? That's cool, though.
Yeah, exactly.
Fucking,
right. Yeah.
Do you have a car down there, or are you, like, just training around, or what?
I borrow, like, I share a car with someone else, since the can't really afford the actual expense for a car right about now.
Yeah.
So, like, whenever I need to go somewhere, we just kind of just, like, we manage, like, who's using the car when.
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah,
I mean, having a car is fucking, what a pain in the ass, man. I got a car here.
Yeah,
in
it's like
City.
You gotta maintain it, right? You gotta maintain it. Then there's gas. Just like the car itself is, like buying. It's another like, it's essential for a lot of people. But in the end, it's such a drain.
Yeah, it's a drain, and it's like one of those things. It's like you know when I hear that, you know, those Buddhist sayings, the less you own, the happier you'd be. Pretty much, it revolves around that. It's like, Jesus Christ, man, all the fucking bullshit I put up with this goddamn car, and now with the snow, well, that's something I guess you're not really worrying about too much this year, huh? You been getting any snow down there in Virginia or what?
No, we got everything. Like, the East Coast has gotten a lot this year. In fact, it snowed this morning, like earlier this morning.
Yeah, how much you got there now?
So, no, it's pretty good now. Like, we had a little over a foot, I think, last week.
Oh,
so.
Yeah, see, I'm like brain damaged.
But
you know,
what
I
you
think
said about
Virginia.
But what you said about Buddhists, that's a good point. You know, like you said, you're talking about like the Buddhist concept of less is more, like just keeping a minimalistic amount. Yeah, that's actually what I do. I'm like, I'm definitely a minimalist. Like the biggest thing I have is a crap ton of books. That's it.
Yeah.
We have, I have a lot of that, but other than
that's good. Because I mean, even paying for cable TV, shit like that. It's like, what the fuck are you watching? What are you watching that's worth $135 a month? You know, what are you watching on that thing that's worth that? It's fucking silly.
Exactly. Yeah. And plus, I know people don't. Not everyone's a pirate, right? But like, you know, you can download most of the things that you want to watch.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Most definitely. So man, it's pretty cool to talk to you because I just finished Laughter of Strangers recently, and I don't want to get into too much of, a book review of it or anything, but it was a great book, and I wanted to give you props
Thanks,
on
man.
That and ask what's going on with, I see you got another one coming out, advanced review copies floating around. I'm starting to see them online.
I got them today, finally.
Cool.
Due to the snowstorm, everything was kind of delayed, and I was worried what, like, you know, where'd my package go? Where'd, like, the 30-something copies of the galleys go? Like they're kind of just lost for a while, but they finally arrived today. Yeah, it's called The Fun We've Had. It comes out May this in May, like early May.
Mm-hmm.
Basic gist of it, I guess, is like the elevator pitch is takes place in a purgatorial sea between life and death. Two lovers, a man and a woman, they are trapped in this kind of situation where they don't realize that they're dead, and they're trying to survive, like cast at sea.
Cool. That sounds pretty badass. So when your box of books showed up today, was the mailman or mailwoman, did you like give him a giant bear hug and like break a rib? Because that's how I feel when when proof copies show up, I just want to take that box of books and put them down for a minute and take the mailman or mail lady out for a nice steak dinner. You know, it's like fucking hooray.
It's exciting, man. Yeah, it's definitely exciting. Well, my UPS guy, whoever it is, he's like a ninja. He'll just leave it there, boom, and I'll look outside. Oh, it's already there. Cool. Yeah. What actually happened today was I was literally refreshing the page for the tracking number, the UPS tracking number, every 5 minutes, and then eventually it said delivered. I was like, all right, fuck, I'm running down the stairs, and I was there. So, yeah, but it's always a great feeling. I think it's even for me, it's better to the first time I actually hold the galley.
Uh-huh.
Sometimes more satisfying than holding the actual finished copy because it's the first time you actually see the physical thing. It's not finished, yes, but it's there.
It finally materializes.
Yeah,
it finally becomes something physical, which is pretty great. My own UPS man thinks I'm a maniac because that's it's just that's what UPS men or women must think of all their their people like me ordering. I get a lot of books, man. I get a lot of books. But I was in an apartment building in New York City, and at one point I was in, like, really great shape, So I was, like, exercising a lot, like, lifting weights and shit in my apartment, because it's, like, a decent-sized apartment. So one of the things I decided to do, I saw on some, like, one of these fitness websites or something, it was, like, you can put weight plates in a backpack and, like, climb up and down stairs for, like, exercise. I was like, wow, that's pretty cool, So I did
Don't
that.
Tell me you did
like,
that. You did that?
Oh yeah,
you did the whole stair thing where you walk up and down the stairs?
Yeah, so I had maybe like 90 pounds in this backpack, okay? And I'm like, I go up to the top of the stairs, and I'm like, oh, man. And I live, I don't live in the biggest building, but it's like one of those pre-war walk-up buildings, so it's maybe like 5 flights, So I get to the top, and I'm up there, and I'm like, holy shit, I'm like bent over, and I'm like already sweating and stuff. And as I'm coming down, I'm just walking down slowly. Here's the UPS guy walking in, So he's carrying packages, and he's having a bad time, He's delivering packages all day. And now I'm embarrassed because, I got to climb back up the stairs for the exercise routine, and the guy's delivering the packages. So I go back up there, and when I come back down again, he's still there, and he confronts me. He's like, you're not walking up and down the stairs for exercise, are you? He's like, that is the most ridiculous thing I've ever seen. He's like, I do this for a living, and what a horrible way to spend your free time. So we're at it.
Where do you live in New York? Like, what neighborhood? I'm just curious.
I live in Washington Heights.
Oh, cool.
I live right by the GWB, so I'm like on 173rd Street.
That's cool. So like I was in Brooklyn over the summer, in Crown Heights. I was in Crown Heights.
Crown Heights is
cool. Where like Tanina Roth and Franklin Park and all that stuff goes. Yeah.
Is that where like Mellow Pages is, the library thing down there? Do you know where that is?
Mellow Pages is in Bushwick, Brooklyn, which is like, I don't remember the directions were, but like it's not near Crown Heights, but you could take like, I think it was, you could take like the C to and transfer to the L somewhere, or like the G to the L, something like that. But it's around. It's in Brooklyn.
Oh, it's there, man. I went to look at apartments in Bushwick when I was first moving here, like 8 years ago, and it was a rough neighborhood at the time, and lots of snow, and I had my car. I was like, "Fuck this, I'm out of here." But
You have a car in New York? Wow. Okay, now I'm putting pieces together, man.
I have a car in New York City. I have a car in New York City. There's something wrong with me, but I have a lot of fun with that car here because me and my wife, we hop in the car on the weekends, especially in the summertime.
Yeah.
We go down to the ocean and we drive out to different upstate New York, up into the mountains, just kind of rambling around, you know, seeing stuff.
That's good. You can get away, you know. Like, I was only there for 3 months, but, like, sure, there's a convenience of the, you know, transport, like the transit system, the subway system, but, like, there's this confining feeling that you just can't truly get away from the endless concrete jungle. And so, like, yeah, I guess there is a reason, if you can afford it, man, definitely go with a car, even in New York City, because you can, maybe you don't want to drive on a daily basis, because it's insane.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone, the traffic conditions there are insane in terms of driving. It's frightening.
Yeah.
But, like, to get away on the weekends, that is probably the like a big deal, just to maintain some semblance of sanity.
Is it ever? Is it ever? So down in, down in Fairfax, are you, like, I don't know. Are you like a beach kind of person? Are you a nature kind of guy? Or how do you usually spend your time when you're not writing or working?
I'm a bit, like, when it comes to nature, I'm more of like a hiking, kind of getting lost in the wilderness kind of dude.
Yeah.
I'm not a big beach guy.
No.
Yeah. Yeah. But I would say, like, if my idea of fun in nature is like, yeah, gearing up and getting lost in some, like, national park or just, like, some situation like that for a couple days.
Did you ever get to ramble around any of the national parks up north, especially, like, Yellowstone and Yosemite and all those things, Rushmore?
Not really. No, just whatever's convenient to me has been kind of a situation. I mean, I always feel like I really need to take advantage of that at some point. But, yeah, I do tend to do a lot of shit. And my free time is usually based on out of convenience. Like, okay, so I have some free time. What can I actually do within this day for a couple hours? It's not like I can travel far lengths and get away and disappear for a while and come back.
Most definitely. So, I want to circle back. I want to talk a little bit more about the book that's coming out. It takes place in a purgatory of sorts, and it's a classic. It sounds like, I haven't read any of it. It sounds like the classic kind of boy and girl kind of, you described it almost as like a romance kind of situation, an odd romance I'm picturing. And
there's definitely some love story kind of feel going on there, but it's deeper than that. It's more like a fable.
Sure.
In a way.
That's cool. I really like the artwork. You know, if people who are listening who haven't seen the artwork, I'll stick a picture of it up on the Facebook wall. Not that solves all the world's problems for my Facebook wall here. But,
I got to plug Matthew Rivere. Matthew Rivere is the master of all that cover art stuff. He's done most of Lazy Fascist's covers, and he did, like, the majority of everything else in small press, really. He's a madman in that. He's a great designer and great writer as well.
Yeah, he did Laughter Strangers. I know
he did Laughter.
Yeah.
I'm actually looking at the cover of the book that's coming out after Fun We've Had. I can't talk about it or anything about it. But I'm looking at the actual cover right now as I talk to you on my laptop, and shit. I just, it's Matthew again, just killing it.
Yeah. I think I almost probably get more excited by book design and the way books look, how they can be little pieces of art. As opposed to just what's inside. I mean, what's inside is great. You know, what's inside a book is fantastic. Obviously I like to read, but the slowly vanishing great design work of paperback books. I love seeing a great design book. so I want to touch on the cover of What Fun We Had, and it's just two people standing in a coffin and paddling through this just open sea, and I like that. I like the stark graphic quality of it. Do you
and on the back cover, I think at least for the galley, the back cover is the coffin without them. So, like, it's the same image reversed, but they're not there, so it's just the empty coffin.
Yeah, that shit's interesting. you know, as opposed to, like, when you look at a really well designed, like, lit fiction book or whatever, interesting work of art book, and then you pick up something from the shelf of Target or Walmart and stuff, and I'm like, oh man, there's a lot of spy shit going on here. I'm seeing a lot of people with guns, you know. No bueno. So what's going on coming up, reading wise? everybody's going to AWP, I guess. That's everybody descending there in Seattle.
Really getting close, man. Are you going to be there?
Yeah, I am going. Yeah, I got my plane ticket the other day, and I'm just going to go and bounce around. I'm going there, just a couple paperback books, and that's it, man. I'm just going to bounce around and drink with people. That's it.
That's the best way to do it. I think that, like, I did that last year. I kind of just, like, hung out with people. Sure, I went to a lot of readings and stuff, but it wasn't – I mean, I go to readings not for the readings. I go for the readings, you know, to meet people, to meet with the people that I've talked to online, to – do all that. And that's what's great about this event. I think over the book fair and everything else, it's just finally getting to talk to the person that you've been talking to or seen online face-to-face.
Yeah, exactly, because, the real people behind the keyboard. It's like...
Right, right.
That's the good stuff. So so what's the big reading people can look for you at in Seattle if they're... They haven't seen all the postings and been tagged and this and that. Where can they look for you? Predominantly.
Yeah. There are a lot of events. I'm going to be tabling at the CCM/Broken River table, which is I don't remember. I have to look up all the information on that, so I can't really drop the actual location. We're like L something. I don't know. I don't remember where. But so I'm going to be there. I'll be floating around. But in terms of events, there's one on Saturday, March 1st. I'm hosting it alongside J. David Osborne and Cameron Pierce. It's a four press mega reading at Left Bank Books. It's CCM, Lazy Fascist, Broken River, and $2 Radio. Over 12 readers. I think they're like maybe 14 readers now. Yeah. So there'll be free craft beer too for anyone who needs extra incentive. So that I'll be at that, and then of course I'll be at Lit Party, which is like every Friday that week of the weekend of the AWP, and other things. Yeah.
Very good. So speaking of which, you just mentioned CCM, Civil Coping Mechanisms.
Right.
You had a big announcement. I don't know how big you consider it. I thought it was pretty cool. I would call it a big announcement today. You had a CCM is doing. Mainline is what you're calling it.
Mm-hmm.
You're doing like a rush kind of. Do you want to kind of describe it for people who aren't in the know?
Right. So the gist of it is, I had this idea kind of floating around in the back of my head for a while, but it didn't really become something big until last night, actually, when I was just sitting there after this Google Hangouts thing that I did with Oscar Schwartz, Blake Butler, Mira Gonzalez. It was like this thing that we did for an hour. We talked about social media and how it's affected us and how we incorporate it into our lives. So I was sitting there, and at one point Oscar Schwartz asked me a question about how many submissions I usually get on a daily basis or weekly basis for CCM. And then, of course, I stated the obvious of what it was. And then as I was talking about it, I started thinking, like, yeah, that's kind of absurd. That's crazy how many submissions I get. So then I put two and two together that, like, last night and decided, you know what, I have a week where I'm actually not writing. I finished a project. I don't want to start until after AWP. I'm going to use that writing time to read manuscripts and do this thing where basically it's called CCM Mainline. It lasts about a week. It ends February 24th, which is Monday, I think.
Yep.
People can submit manuscripts to ccmmainline@gmail.com. I will be constantly refreshing that page, reading everything that's submitted to me, and every day I will have an update of like the top three candidates. So like, there's a possibility that one that just blew me away will be there every day. Sure. Will be on the front runner list or whatever. But then there's a possibility that some will drop as others kind of take that spot. It's kind of a little bit of a, I think Ben Fama said something like it reminds him of like reality TV a little bit. I'm like,
Survivor.
Maybe it is. But
Survivor.
It was just some idea that I thought, like, I'm tired of contests. I'm tired of the usual concept of this, like, pay a reading fee sometimes, and then you get this contest, and there's absolutely nothing. Silence for, like, 6 months, and then you get, like, this kind of, like, it's usually a really disappointing verdict. It's, like, three to five random, like, manuscripts, and then that's it. You don't get any kind of response from anyone. So I figured, let's put two and two together. Let's try to help me out by not having to read, like, 900 manuscripts, and let's make it fun.
Make it fun. And, I'll give you props on that because it's pretty cool because, looking around on social media, I mean, everybody's – I feel like the circle of people that kind of bounce around the small press. You hear the names, and a lot of people pop up here and there. And I've heard people say that you're one of the hardest working guys in the small press. And then I see something like this, and I'm like, oh my God, is he like fucking with people? This is like insane, fucking beautiful, man. Really, really cool thing to just fucking kick it into gear. You know, sometimes I think things get a little stale, get a little dusty. Open the doors.
That's kind of like my problem with everything, not just reading and moving small press and all that. I get bored of things easily. Like something that would keep a normal person's attention span for, like, let's say it's a TV show for an entire season, I'll get fucking bored after the third episode if they're not constantly reinventing it. So I have like that thing against me, but at the same rate, I guess it works when it comes to stuff like this, because I'm basically doing this more so even for my enjoyment, because I got bored of just reading submissions. So I'm like, let's make it fun. That's kind of my mantra all the time. Even with writing, just like what I'm putting out, I don't want to put out the same book, and I never will. I always want to make it fun for myself as much as the person that's reading it, that might read it.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like that endless hustle, as I call it.
That's cool. The endless hustle. Yeah, because, people say it all the time, if it's not fun, stop doing it. And if you can keep the fun, you never have to stop doing it. You know, it keeps being cool.
Exactly.
So
you gotta prioritize. You gotta know what you're doing and why you're doing it. Otherwise, like, what's the point?
Yeah, exactly. What's the point? Speaking of TTM, you guys just dropped a really cool book from Robert Vaughn, Attics and Basements. I was a fan of that one. Well done with that. And
thanks.
What else? What, you know, I know you got these submissions open, but are there books in the pipe that are coming out before these submissions end? What's next, release wise?
There will be no new books until late March. I'm gonna actually bring up the list because there's enough where I'll miss them. I'll just run through them. Okay, so late March there'll be SND by Soren Melville. In April, I have two coming out, Left Hand by Paul Curran and Black Cloud by Juliet Escoria. In May, there are also two others, The Daydream Society by Evan Retzer and Green Lights by Kyle Muntz. In June, I'm putting out actually the first ever alt-lit anthology. It's also the first anthology that CCM has ever published. It's called 40 Likely to Die Before 40, An Introduction to Alt-Lit. It's edited by Cameron Pierce and myself. July, I've got Walls by Andrew Duncan Worthington, Noir, A Love Story by Edward J. Rathke. In August, I'm re-releasing Jordan Castro's book that came out on, I think it was Black Coffee Press, before they folded. It's called If I Really Wanted to Feel Happy, I Would Feel Happy Already. September, I've got two, and I'm really excited about finally showing the cover and all the illustrations done by John. I think it's John Demet Wood. Yeah, he did that. It's Paper Champion by Shane Jones. It's going to be a big one, I think. I've got the first debut poetry collection by Bunny Rogers. It's called My Apologies Accepted. In October, I've got Research, a Novel for Performance by Joseph Rippey. It's his second book for CCM. Yeah, his the new release that came out this month actually is Because by Joseph. So like he's got two this year from us. And then in December, rounding it all out with Winter Swim by Ryan W. Bradley. Everyone should know him for his excellent work at Artistically Declined Press. They put out like books by Roxane Gay and a bunch of others.
Bunch of others.
So it's about 15 books total this year from CCM.
Well, that's cool. You sound like you're keeping busy and you're enjoying it and fuck everything else, right?
Yeah.
Fantastic.
Yeah, that's pretty much the way it is. It's like, fuck it. Well, let's just go 100% into it, see what happens.
Cool, man. Well, hey, I want to thank you for coming on the show and telling me about all this cool shit you got going on. I got a whole list of books and names and people here now in front of me. I'll catch up with you in Seattle, and I wish you luck in all your travels.
Yeah, man, thanks for having me, and I'll see you in, Seattle. We'll have a beer or something.
Yeah, definitely, man. Beer's up in the air. All right.
Yeah, exactly. All right, man.
All right. Later on, man. All right, that was Michael Seidlinger. Cool guy. Next on the show, we're going to talk to Gabriel Ricard. I don't know if he's there on the switchboard. Gabe, are you there?
He is indeed, bud. It's wonderful to speak to you for the first time.
Hey, man, what's going on? You see, this is what I'm talking about. So everybody, listening, I'll actually introduce this guy. We're talking to Gabriel Ricard. He's, your bio, according to your bio, you do like everything, acting, all kinds of wonderful stuff. I know you as a writer. I enjoy your work. Gabriel's, you have a forthcoming novel coming out from Cleftjaw Press, Bondage Night at Darling Caro's. And then also a forthcoming poetry collection from Marginale in Los Angeles, and that's called Crowd of Hungry Dogs. So it's a pleasure to talk to you today. Gabe, what's going on, man?
Oh, not much. I'm actually coming back from Washington, D.C. I was working security for an anime convention that's held every year at the National Harbor Gaylord Hotel called Katsucon.
Mm-hmm. Was that a crazy time? Was it a big party or what?
It was relatively sane for me because I worked in the early morning shift from 8 a.m. to 2 p.m. All the silly stuff tends to happen in the evening when you got the rave and whatever else those damn kids are into, you know?
Yeah, those crazy kids and their cartoon heads, right?
Yeah.
So you staffed this thing for quite a few years, right?
This will be the 2014 marks 10 years of doing conventions. This is my 8th CatsCon.
Huh?
It's 10 years. Certainly was 8.5 years longer than I ever thought I would be doing this, but I have met a wonderful community of people through the years, and it's also kind of like the mob, especially if you work at security. Nobody ever retires. You just disappear.
Yeah, you disappear for a while. And, you know, you go to jail for a while, and when you come out when you've served your time, and they give you a spot in the warehouse receiving packages again, right?
Right, and I know you Jersey guys know a thing or two about the mob.
Yeah, I'm in construction, you know. So that's a big front for other shit, you know, basically. Works out good, though.
Yeah, it's good stuff. It's exhausting, but it's fun.
Yeah. So, hey, man, I wanted to get right to the point here. So you got this book coming out from Cleftjaw, Bondage Night at Darling Caro's. Why don't you kind of set it up, explain what the book's about to all the lovely people who are listening.
Well, it's an extremely pessimistic love story about two people who are unhealthy and unbalanced and have wildly unrealistic expectations about the ability of love to conquer all and what happens when they get together, particularly in terms of the guys. It's a male and female couple, and in terms of the guy's perspective, I think he's... He's what you kind of call like the kind of romantic who grew up on certain movies, certain books, certain songs, and is living out those things, or at least his perception of those things, and finding out that, of course, it's never as neat or clever as it is in media.
Yeah, things are different. Things are different once they get rolling.
Yeah.
So when's the book? Going to drop, you think? Is there a release date? What's happening with it?
We're gunning for sometime in the next 2 or 3 months, I believe. Frankie Metropolis, who is one of the Cleftjaw guys, has been just absolutely fantastic about keeping me in the loop and just working with me every step of the way. He will have a manuscript for me probably in the next week or two. And we're going to move forward from there. And it's a fairly short novel at roughly 60,000 words. So the editing process is not going to take hardly any time at all. And I also want to mention, if I may, that I have an extremely talented comic artist by the name of Joan Cook, who is handling our cover, who's going to be doing the cover art for the novel. And Joan is somebody I've known for about 9 years, who I actually met through these anime conventions. and I've always wanted to work with her on a project, and I'm finally getting to do that, and I'm very excited about everything that's come together as far as this book goes, and I look forward to it coming out in a couple of months. It shouldn't be longer than that.
Yeah, so, you know, I was just talking to Michael about that, you know, putting a book together, and when it finally transforms from a document into a physical copy, and those galleys show up. So yeah, you got to really be looking forward to that, huh? This will be your first book in physical form.
Yeah.
Have you had anything released in the past?
Nope. It's been 17 years of decadent failure up to this point.
It's pretty cool that you call it decadent failure. I like that you use the word decadent. That means that you're having a good time with it. Is it like it can be like decadent or hedonistic failure? You know, something big. You know, at least you're not failing.
Well,
you know, piddly.
All the crying is on the inside. All the crying is on the inside, bud.
I got a bomb shelter below my building where I go to cry and read. You know, it's nice. Yeah,
right.
You don't have anything like that.
No, I just crank up my DVD of WALL-E and hug myself and sob.
Yeah, that's another thing. You're quite the
Robo-tripping helps too.
The film freak you do, and you're doing a film coverage column, Drunk Monkeys. What's your MO with movie watching and reviewing movies and covering movies? What's your tell me about that.
Well, the column is what happened with Drunk Monkeys in the first place was Matt. I had submitted, I believe, a short story or a poem, and
sure.
Matthew liked it. Matthew Gorecki.
Uh-huh.
I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly. Awesome.
It's not even his real name. Anyway.
What?
No, I'm just fucking around. You're pronouncing it right.
Yes, but Matthew asked me if I had anything else, and at the time, I had just finished my 7-year tenure with Unlikely Stories,
uh-huh.
Which is run by a guy named Jonathan Penton, who does exceptional work as well.
Great guy.
I came up with a column, and I gave it the stupidest title I could possibly think of, Captain Canada's Movie Rodeo,
uh-huh.
And I decided that I would just review stuff that I had seen in the past couple days. And that's pretty much, so there's really no rhyme or reason to the column in terms of the selection process. Everything is motivated very keenly by the fact that I am very passionate about movies, especially movies that I don't think a ton of people have seen.
Mm-hmm.
So the column is a lot of, hey, have you seen this movie? I mean, it's old, but goddamn, you got to see this movie, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Which is what I like about it. I like that sometimes you definitely, it's more of a, hey, check this out kind of thing. I can tell you where my interest in movies came from. It came out of isolation and boredom. Do you feel like your love for it kind of spawned in the same way? Where did you grow up? Was it a small little offset place, or were you in a community? Where'd you grow up?
I was born in Alberta,
mm-hmm.
And I grew up. I grew up in a town called Lake Cowichan. I had moved to Lake Cowichan, British Columbia. I had moved there when I was about 2, and I lived there until I was, 10. And then we moved to another small town called Eucluelet. Lake Cowichan was nice, though, because we had an extraordinary library. The Vancouver Regional Library is still the best library system I've ever seen.
Yeah.
And we had a video store called McQuinn's, and it was owned by this old couple. And I loved going to the video store. I loved walking the aisles and looking at the cassette boxes, because this would have been the late 80s.
Yeah.
And just wondering what the movies were about. And one of the first movies I ever saw, Ghostbusters, had a huge influence on me, of course, as well.
Yeah, that was a great movie. It was one of the first movies I really remember seeing. I remember watching that. My dad and mom didn't have a whole lot of money, and they were renting a VCR from the video store. And one of the movies they rented was Ghostbusters, and one of the other movies was I think E.T. So like those were those two, and I just remember watching that for the first time, and I'm like, oh my god, so great.
The first movie my parents ever took me to actually was Ghostbusters 2, which in retrospect was a terrible movie to take a 4-year-old to.
Yeah. Yeah, with the painting that comes alive and everything, all the slime under the city.
No fucking heads in the sewer.
Yeah, oh my god, the heads in the sewer.
Yeah, and then Max von Sydow's, you know,
yeah,
bone chilling voice.
Oh man. He's the worst.
Because he was the voice of Vigo.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know what's funny too about we're talking about video stores and VHS tapes and stuff like that. I was thinking about this the other day, and it's kind of like a big part of my adolescence was being, before I hit puberty and just kind of becoming interested in seeing naked ladies pretty much and stuff like that. And in the video store, the little shitty video store, we used to have the corral, those like corral doors, like the old West, you could like sneak inside and see like the porno videos all on the walls. And, I kind of feel bad for kids today that they don't have the junky video store porn corral to sneak into anymore. That's gone, and they can get their pornography. There's no adventure to it anymore. You just click and there it is. So
there isn't. I mean, I remember, as a child of the '90s and the '80s, I remember sitting through shit like barbed wire.
Oh yeah,
and Showgirls
for the 2-minute scene. Of
right,
side boob in
yeah.
the moonlight.
Yep. And what else? I remember one. I remember once my friend and I stayed up until like 3 a.m. and watched this weird French film that was rated NC-17, and it didn't even have subtitles. It was in French, and we had no idea what was going on. But we sat through the whole movie because we figured since it was rated NC-17.
Gotta be something.
There be something, and if I remember correctly, there wasn't.
They were cursing in French, but you couldn't understand any of it.
Well, I should have been able to, being that I'm half French, but my biological father.
Yeah. So movies kick ass. You're getting into the poetry scene too here. You got a book coming out with Marginalia. We mentioned Macaraki from Drunk Monkeys. He's the publisher of Marginalia. And I wanted to see if you can kind of talk a little bit about your book that's coming out. Let me see if I can fuck the title up. Is it called Cloud of Hungry Dogs?
Clouds of Hungry Dogs, yes.
There we go. I get 98% correct on that title. That's a record for me.
Yeah, that was close enough. Clouds of Hungry Dogs is, I suppose, the culmination of just the fact that I've been writing poetry for about 12 years, and I've been published here and there, certainly. I've done okay in that regard, but I'm still sitting on probably 2,000, maybe 2,500 unpublished poems.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of them are complete and then utter bullshit to me, but a lot of them are things that were very difficult to write or enjoyable to write, or something that I took a very personal experience from that I would love to see published.
Yeah.
And it is going to be the first in a trilogy of poetry books.
Fantastic. So when is there any kind of a release date for the first in the series?
The battle plan for that is to have Clouds and Hungry Dogs out, I was told, August.
Okay.
So it's that gives me plenty of time, of course, to finish assembling the manuscript, which I haven't done.
Well, yeah.
Sorry.
Mm.
Sorry
it's
about
okay.
that.
It's okay.
The selection process has been interesting because it means having to go through 2,500 poems. And initially I had no idea how to go about doing that. And that's when I found the title poem, Clouds of Hungry Dogs. And as I read it, I began to get a sense of the type of material that I would want to see in the book. The book will consist entirely of third-person narrative poetry pieces. The second book will be first person. The third book will be a mix of the two.
Cool. What do you get out of poetry different? You talked about it being personal. You got more of a visceral response from it, more of an emotional response from it. I equate poetry just to the feeling of it is when you write a. When you're writing a poem, it's a lot different than writing a short story. It's kind of like...
Very different. Very, very different.
Something that kind of happens. Half the time, it might feel like nonsense is what I get out of it when I'm writing a poem. It might be nonsense, or there's not so much of a real concrete thing. Go
ahead.
I try not to ask too many people their methods, and I'm certainly not going to ask that with you, but I'm curious what you kind of get out of it, as opposed to writing reviews and short stories or even novel work. What's the appeal for poetry?
As grateful as I am that I am able to write reviews for Drunk Monkeys and for the other places I've written reviews for over the years, such as Red Fez and Unlikely Stories, ultimately, you know, writing reviews, as much fun as it can be, and as enjoyable as it is to contribute to the literary community in that way, in the end, I'm a creative person, or I perceive myself to be a creative person, and poetry helps me to get that out of my system, and usually in such a way, in such amount of time, that doesn't require as much of a commitment, a physical commitment, as a short story or a novel or a script would.
Yeah. That's another thing. You're into the screenwriting. Tell me a little bit about that. What do you got going on with screenplays, plays themselves either?
Well, I had a play that was produced in Richmond in 2003 by Barksdale Theater, Theater 4, which is the big theater group in Richmond. Richmond prides itself on its theater community. And from that point, that play, for whatever reason, the play resounded really well with a lot of people, and it was almost a film at one point and then a comic book. Mm-hmm. And it was produced again in Chicago, probably around 2005, 2006, and then it was most recently produced again in Savannah, Georgia in 2010. And kind of with that kind of momentum, I then went on to write several stage and film scripts, unfortunately none of which have ever sold, but I also haven't made much of an effort to sell them, admittedly.
Yeah, that seems to always be the thing, you know? It's the other side of the coin, man. The business side of things, which seem to escape a lot of people. Do you feel like you're developing more of a bone for that kind of thing, or are you still feeling pretty much rooted in creativity?
I'm sorry, could you repeat the question?
Are you getting any better at the business side of this shit, you think? Or are you still kind of...
Does it get easier? It does get easier. It gets a good deal easier. I really, really have to thank Jonathan Penton again for that, because the reason why I got the Unlikely Stories gig in the first place, which was 9 years ago, was because... I tried to get an interview with Henry Rollins, and Henry's publicist said that Henry didn't do unsolicited interviews from freelancers. And I knew Jonathan Penton because I pitched a column to him, and I said, can I say I work for Unlikely Stories and get this Henry Rollins interview? And he said, sure, because I don't think he thought that I was actually going to come back with a Henry Rollins interview. I did.
Yeah.
And through that began a very wonderful association in which I learned a lot about the business, and I learned a lot about management of materials and resources and writers, and the education continues every single day. certainly through Matthew and Frankie at Cleftshaw and Drunk Monkeys, respectively.
There's a lot of shit going on, bud.
It's exhausting. It's absolutely draining, but it's on a good day. It's a good reason to get out in the morning. It's a good reason to continue living. Because I don't know. Well, as a great fan of your books, I'm actually reading F-250 right now and enjoying it.
Coming novel. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a good book, but. It's a continuing educational experience, but it's great because you life sucks. That's what makes sense my view.
Life sucks.
So you find things that make you happy, and that would be, if I were to give advice to any writers or anybody who wants to write, just write. I don't care what you do. Just write.
Yeah.
If it makes you happy. And then go from there. Or play your guitar in your basement and pretend you're Springsteen.
There you go.
Whatever makes you happy.
I don't think there's any better advice to ever give anybody else. And I got to really thank you for your time, man, for coming on here and talking about your great stuff that you got coming up. I'm looking forward to this Cleftshaw novel, and I'm looking forward to this Cleftshaw poetry. Is your anime convention time done? Your anime convention staffing time all finished up, or you got another couple of days?
No, I'm home now. I just got off the train. Because after 40,000 miles of gray and 15 years of grayout, I decided that I'd had enough. So yeah.
Train minutes.
But
train time.
But the convention finished, and it was a good one. And I do want to say real quick, since I believe our time is coming to an end, and I'm going to crank out the Wally in a minute here.
Yeah.
It's crying time.
It's crying time.
I do want to mention, though, that Cleftshaw in particular, Arginalia has a couple of things out. The Drunk Monkeys Anthology, Volume 1, which is available at Amazon.com, and I believe another book that I unfortunately can't remember right now. But we do have a Facebook page. And
Gabe. What's that?
Yes?
It's Gabe's book. What the hell's the name of that book? It's about the 90s. It's about...
Yes. I feel really stupid because I reviewed it.
Oh, yeah,
but,
right.
Nate Graziano wrote a fantastic book about college experience in the 90s, which I wholeheartedly recommend to anybody, particularly anybody who lived through that time and place. But there is also a Facebook page, as there is for Cleftshaw, and I do want to say that Cleftshaw.com has a fantastic range of books out already, including one by Frankie, a couple of anthology collections, a print edition of past Cleftshaw issues, and... there is actually, I believe, a giveaway still going on in which if you buy one of our books at Cleftshaw.com, we will enter your name into a drawing that will be held eventually. I don't remember the date now, but we will have a drawing, and that person will receive our entire catalog.
Well, there you go. Good luck
to
anybody.
So definitely check that out.
Yeah, enter that contest.
Definitely check that out.
Win some books, you know. Well, Gabe, man, thanks for coming on the show, and I hope the rest of your evening goes pretty good. Turn that Wally on and get to crying, all right?
That's right. Thank you so much for having me, and I hope I can do the show again sometime soon.
Oh, fuck, no problem, man. You're going to have to come back on. All right.
I would love to. Thank you very much.
Night, man. Yeah, keep it real.
You too. You too.
Okay. So that was Gabe Ricard. And, he's got a whole bunch of cool shit going on. Jesus Christ, he's got enough energy for everybody, doesn't he? Next on the show, we're going to talk to our final guest, Cameron Pierce, and he's the author of the most recently published Lantern Jaws. At least I think it's published. I had an advanced review copy of it and enjoyed the hell out of it. And Cameron, he's got a whole whole pile of great books out there, and he's also the publisher of Lazy Fascist. Cameron, you there?
Hey, can you hear me?
Yeah, man, I can hear you. How's it going?
Cool. Hey, good. How are you, man?
I'm doing pretty good. You call from Portland?
Yeah, I am.
Yeah, I, you know, don't think I'm psychic or anything. I'm, like, so stupid. All I can really ever zero in on from bios is, like, where the fuck people live. So, like, that's, like, my big thing. I'm like, whoa, this guy lives in Portland. I'll mention that. How's it going there tonight?
Good. It's been raining here the past couple of days, but that's to be expected. It looks like it's sunny now, just in my office, and going to head out for dinner after this.
Cool. I got a few friends in Portland. I guess everybody's got Portland. You know, they can claim to have Portland friends. A friend of mine does, she's like, reading. You ever been, do you know where Tad's Dumpling House is? It's like chicken and dumplings. I think it's like right outside of town. Martha Grover does like, what do you call them? Like true story readings there, like the Moth almost, NPR Moth kind of things. So I'm always like, oh, they're so tempted. It sounds so cool. I just picture a bunch of bearded people with glasses sitting around telling great stories. So yeah, man. I wanted to ask you some questions about your recent books that you have out, and see if I can get you to talk a little bit about Lantern Jaw. What's going on with that? And could you like set it up for people who are listening if they're not sure what kind of writing you do and all that stuff?
Yeah. Lantern Jaws is actually a Kindle-only sampler of stories mm-hmm. from my three collections published by Eraserhead Press. In 2010, Eraserhead put out my first collection, Lost in Cat, and that went on to win the 2010 Wonderland Book Award for Best Bizarre Collection of the Year. And then I think it was a year later, Eraserhead put out my second collection, Abortion Arcade, and then in 2012, my third collection, Dow You Donut Bastards, came out. So Lantern Jaws is sort of a mini collection of the most popular stories from all three of those collections. The stories that tend to get singled out by readers and reviewers. So I decided to put those just in one sort of really cheap, affordable ebook only edition. And some of those stories tend to be a bit quieter. Lantern Jaws is a Lovecraftian high school story about a loner who meets a girl whose face is covered by a surgical mask. And over the course of the story, he discovers the terrible secret behind the mask, why she wears it, and he's intermittently visited by the ghost of his ex-best friend's dead grandmother, which you'll find out why in the course of the story. Destroyed Room, which closes out that collection, and also closes out the Bizarro Starter Kit Purple, which is a sampler of stories from various Bizarro authors, is sort of a Lynchian novella about a man who awakes to discover that everyone in the world is a marionette. And through the course of the story, he discovers what that means.
It's pretty great. You got a great ability to actually do these great little elevator pitches for what your stuff's about, which is pretty admirable. You know, from talking to lots of different people, especially people writing short stories, and you know they can't explain what the fuck the thing is about. It's a great sounds like a great great collection. Just starting to dig into it, but you're going to wind up floating around at AWP, I'm sure. I heard Michael talking about Lazy Fascist doing stuff with Civil Coping Mechanisms. Are you going to do any readings out there?
Friday night, is co-hosting a reading with Small Doggies Press, $2 Radio, and Nailed Magazine. And I think I'm reading that night. That's Friday night, but I can't remember the name of the venue. So I know the information's on Facebook, and at the Lady Bash's table will have handbills for that. And then Saturday night, we're doing a reading at Left Bank Books, which is a really awesome, radical bookstore right in Pike Place Market. That's with Civil Coping Mechanisms and Jolly Radio, as well as Broken River Books. And that's going to be almost like a really massive mini-fest of like a dozen or so authors from all the presses. Really quick readings. We're going to have free craft beer, and that's going to be a really, really fun, crazy night. And in addition to those two, actually, I think those are the only two events we're doing at AWP this year.
That's good. So, you know, keep it simple. You have a little more time to, you know, I always figure like the less events that you're curating, the more time you have just to actually enjoy your time there, you know.
Enjoy
your time, maybe run into some, you know, old friends and make some new ones, but that's that. Lazy Fascist has put out some great books. I got a couple of Michaels sitting here. What's coming up, release schedule wise, and what are you looking forward to?
Let's see. We just released this month Witch Fist by Sam Pink, which is a novel about a group of friends who live on the streets of Chicago. It's Sam's eighth or ninth book with us, and in my opinion, it's his most powerful work yet. We also just put out American Monster by J.S. Brucalar, and she's an Australian writer. This is her debut novel. It's a post-apocalyptic feminist sci-fi novel set in a world where California has broken off from the mainland and fallen into the ocean. So it's like William Burroughs writing hard science fiction. I really love that book. And then we also put out The Door That Faced West by Alan M. Clark, which is a really violent, pulpy, historical Western. And in a couple months here, in May, we'll be releasing The Collected Works Volume 2 of Noah Cicero by Noah Cicero, The Last Horror Novel in the History of the World by Brian Allen Carr, The Fun We've Had by Michael Seidlinger, and the first issue of our new biannual print literary journal, which is called Lazy Fascist Review.
Very cool. So, yeah, a whole suitcase full of great stuff coming up. Well, I got to say, what's next with you? I really get a kick out of the title. You know, you're new to me. I'm just discovering. People have been recommending your books to me, and I'm just starting to read your stuff. But I love your titles and artwork for your books. Die Donut Bastard, that's fucking awesome. What's coming up with you with your own writing, other than your publishing of other people? What you got going on?
So last year, I co-wrote a novel with Shane McKenzie and Adam Cesar called Leprechaun in the Hood, the Musical, a Novel. And it's a novelization of Leprechaun in the Hood. And we just secured today plans for that novel, which we can't talk about yet, but that will probably be announced very soon here in the next couple weeks. You'll find out what's happening with that. So really excited about the project. Love Shane, Adam's writing. They're two of my favorite horror writers going right now. Pleasure. Also working on a novel called Vulture, which is dealing with fish and pollution, the Willamette River, which divides Portland in half, is a super fun site. And right in the middle of this very green city that takes real pride in caring for its natural environment is one of the most polluted, neglected rivers in the country. So, and I fish there a lot. And over the past year or so, it's played a larger and larger role in what I'm writing about. So, in addition to the novel, I've also got a collection of short stories called Our Love Will Go the Way of the Salmon, and hope that both of those books get out next year. One already has a publisher lined up. I can't announce that yet. No contract has been signed. The other is still looking for a home. In addition to that, I'm writing a novel called The Incoming Tide, which is a quiet crime story set in a coastal town here in Oregon.
That's cool. But, you know, keep moving like a shark, right?
That's kind of how it goes. Yeah, I've been spending my mornings writing, and then I bounce over to publishing stuff in the afternoon and kind of move around wherever during the day and usually have projects that I'm working on daily. So, yeah, throwing a lot out there.
Well, I got to say, man, it's been a pleasure talking to you because you got some really cool shit going on, and I know you'll keep at it. And I'll have to try to drag you. I'll have to try to come and drag you down for a beer in Seattle. You know, if you see me stumbling around all drunk, call me a cab.
Yeah.
Call me a cab or something.
So you'll be at AWB?
Yeah, I'll be there. I'll be the.
Cool, man. Yeah.
So yeah, man. Thanks for coming on the show, and I'll catch up with you there. Enjoy your rest of your evening, okay?
Yeah.
Enjoy your dinner.
All right. I'll grab a beer with you in Seattle then. Sounds good.
All right. Party on, Mr. Cameron Pierce. So that's the show. We had some pretty good guests tonight. I'm always just so surprised when people agree to come on this fucking show. We talked to Michael Seidlinger, the author of Laughter of Strangers, and the forthcoming Most Fun We Had, publisher of Silver Coping Mechanisms. We talked to Gabriel Ricard. He's got a forthcoming novel out from Cleftjaw Press. And a collection of poetry coming out from Marginalia. Then we talked to Cameron Pierce. Cameron is the publisher of Lazy Fascist. And I tell you what, he's just got some great projects going on. I'm currently reading Lantern Jaws. And as Cameron explained, it's hand-picked short stories from three other collections. And I'm enjoying the hell out of it, and I think it's something, if you're a Kindle reader, pick it up, and I hope you enjoy as much as I do. So thanks for listening to the show. Next week, next Tuesday, I'm going to be in Seattle, so we're not going to have a show then, but we come back on March 4th, we're going to have Court Bledsoe, Michael Dykes, and Ben Zhang. And then on March 11th, we're going to talk to Alyssa Nutting, author of Handbook. And I'm going to talk to David Atkinson and Nathan Lesley. So keep posted, and once again, thanks for listening. Enjoy the rest of your evening.